Good morning, my name's John, I'm an alcoholic. And I saw over the weekend some people asking for a quiet moment because of the nerves to just do a little prayer before we start. So, right God, if you get me out of this one, I promise I won't drink again. Anyway, I'm John, I'm an alcoholic. My home group is in Ringwood, which is in the south of England, Monday night, big book study. And if any of you happen to be in the south of England, come along. Don't all come at once, or if you do, give us a shout and I'll get out and get extra biscuits. I didn't really want to stop drinking when I came to AA, actually. I honestly wanted the consequences of my drinking to stop, but the thing about alcohol is, when I was a little kid, as far back as I can remember, I was a very shy, skinny, spotty little ginger kid, you know, and when the first time I took any alcohol, first time I got properly drunk, all of that disappeared. I felt, you know, I became a great dancer, I became an expert on every subject, I became less ginger, I became able to speak to women, and it had an incredible effect. And in the book, in the big book, it says many of us could have given up drinking early while there was yet time. But if it's having that effect, you know, there's no way that I'm going to want to give it up. And it had that effect for quite, you know, I don't really remember how long, but for a period of time it had that effect. And then after a period of time, it was like I was kind of searching for that, just, you know, maybe the next drink, maybe the one after that. I'll just, you know, I almost could capture it, but never could quite, and I would end up overshooting and then lying slumped somewhere. Yeah. And then it was that was the sort of stage of my drinking for many years. And then towards the end of my drinking, it was just a case of trying to shut down the screaming and shouting in my head. And that's the thing. I've tried to speak to, you know, people, non-alcoholics, about that screaming and shouting. They just have no idea what you're talking about, you know. And I speak to another alcoholic, you know, almost. So, you know, yes, there was trouble with the police throughout the years, and yes, there was trouble with family, yes, family and friends and work and all that, but I know people who have drunk too much and got in trouble. That's not the reason, you know, that I didn't get in trouble with the police because I'm an alcoholic or because I drank too much. I didn't get any of that. None of that really matters. What happens? The problem with me is when I try to stop drinking, because I, in the middle of the 90s, I had a bit of a misunderstanding with a tree in the car and the police and the people that had been on my case about my drinking for as far back as I can remember. It was like they were kind of, "Hey, we told you there's a problem." So to prove to everyone that I didn't have a problem, I stopped drinking. I didn't need AA, I wasn't an alcoholic or anything. I just decided to prove to them and to myself, I guess, that there wasn't a problem. I stopped drinking. And I didn't know how dangerous it was to stop abruptly like that. I was a daily drinker at the time. And you know, after the first few days of the kind of the withdrawals and the hallucinations and all that horrible stuff, and I started to feel really quite fit and healthy. And then that lasted for, I don't know, a week or so or two. And then I started to kind of get a little bit, you know, I can't really put my finger on what's wrong, but everything is wrong, you know. And, you know, in the book it describes it as restless, irritable, discontented, you know. And that's a bit of an understatement, you know. I've also heard somebody explaining it, like one of these American speakers. He talks about it's like someone sneaks into your bedroom at night and plants a little spring in your gut. And on a daily basis, or hour by hour, or minute by minute sometimes, that's just getting tighter and tighter. And there's a guy down our way in Bournemouth who talks about having his head in a vice, and that's getting tighter and tighter. And I wouldn't have been able to kind of make up, I wouldn't have been able to describe it like that myself, but when I heard these people describing that feeling, that's what happens to me. Without trying to get through life without the anaesthetic, I've got that build, you know, that stuff building up. And in the middle of the 90s, when this was going on, I endured that for 15 months. I mean, I did smoke quite a lot of outside issues, but you do need, you know, you do need something to take the edge of it. But I didn't drink for that whole period of time. And that spring thing, everyone was just... And it made that period of my life was quite lonely because... You know, when that's going on the inside and people say things like, good morning, you go, what do you mean good morning, what, and good about it, you know, it would be, I reacted to people, I just couldn't stand anybody, or anything, you know, and as I say, it became quite a lonely time, but a year into that period of staying dry, I was working in London at the time, and I was standing on the edge of the platform, watching the train coming in, deciding whether or not to step off, right? And if you'd said to me then, you're suffering from untreated alcoholism, I would have, you know, I've not had a drink for a year. That's, you know, I had no idea that it was a connect. I mean, I was dying for a drink, but I didn't know that that's what was wrong with me. I thought I was surrounded by idiots, you know, and those people at work and my wife and all those, everything is them, you know. And because I had quite a lot of counselling during that period, and I would explain to my counsellor what was going on in my life, and they would say, you know, no wonder you drink, and you know, all that kind of stuff. I never really told them the whole story, of course, but you know, and that was like a bit of a kind of you know, permission to carry on, to go back to drinking, because they're experienced in all this, and they must have heard, you know, lots of people's stories. And if they're saying, you know, one of them said to me, the trouble with you, John, is that you're not in touch with your emotions, right? And the trouble with me is my emotions were on me all the time, but I had no idea about how to explain what was going on until I came to AA and heard people talking about, you know, fear and anxiety and resentment, and I had no idea how to put that into words. You know, that spring thing in the head, the head vice thing, I had no idea how to explain that. But because you can't tell the counsellor what's going on inside is, you know, that kind of screaming. I can't put that into words, you know. And where I'm from, you can't stand at the bar and tell the other lads, you know, I'm having trouble with my emotional nature. You know, you get your head kicked in. And so it wasn't until I came to AA and I heard other people talking about what was wrong, you know. So anyway, after 15 months of not drinking, it was inevitable. I couldn't stay. It's not like I got up one day and thought, oh, I fancy a drink. It was, I couldn't stand not drinking anymore. You know, I couldn't stand it. And so I started drinking. And I tried to start controlling my drinking. Like, I would only drink at the weekends. And sometimes I would only drink at the weekends. And sometimes the weekend would start on a Thursday and finish on a Tuesday. And sometimes the weekend would last 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, it was like... I would try to stay stopped, and then that spring thing would be building up, and that head thing, and then I would start drinking again, and then I would drink and drink and drink until the consequences got bad enough to, or I got ill, you know, or whatever, I would, and then I would have to stop again, and then I would stay stopped as long as I could until I had to start again. And I've heard somebody describe that sort of behaviour like a... It was like the consequences of my drinking and the feeling, the intensity of the feeling of shame and guilt and the fear and all that was so intense that the idea of drinking is up, it's not happening. It's just not happening. And as the time goes on, that spring thing and the head thing starts to gain a bit of weight. And the idea that, you know, the intensity of the shame and fear would start to kind of ease off a bit. And at some point, it would tip over and I'd think, I'll just have a couple. I'm not going to get in that state again. I promise, I'm only having two or three just to take the edge off. And of course, as I found out since coming to AA, I can't have two or three because I've got this, what they describe in the book as the phenomenon of craving. As soon as I take any alcohol into my system, it kicks off this abnormal reaction that makes me want the next drink more. And then once I've got two inside me, that reaction is heightened. And I speed up when I drink. And I have no idea that this is not happening to other people, you know. In the early days, when I used to drink in pubs with other people, they would say things like, let's have a couple after work. And after a couple, they would go, right, my dinner will be ready, I'm off. And I'd be like, where are you going? Why are you going now? You know, it never occurred to me. And it says in the book, this phenomenon of craving never occurs in the average temperate drinker. It's only limited to our class, you know. I had no idea that they're feeling like that. They've got no idea what's happening inside me, and I'm off and running, you know. And, you know, if that was the only problem, the phenomenon of craving, if that was the only problem, I wouldn't even have to come here, because not taking the first drink would be the solution, you know. And I remember after, you know, I did that stopping and starting thing for about, I don't know, 7, 8 years, 9 years. I can't remember exactly when it all started, but I know I came to AA in 2005, and because I was kind of tricked into coming to a meeting, I had a bit of a convert. I didn't know I was being 12-stepped at the time, but this guy came round and we had what I thought was a drinking story competition for for a couple of hours, and then he tricked me into coming to a meeting. But just as he was leaving after that 2 hour conversation, as he was getting in his car, he went, God bless. I went, oh, that's the catch, isn't it? That is it. And so I was sitting, anyway, I started to come to AA, and I remember coming to that, my very first meeting happened to be a joint meeting between AA and Al-Anon. And I remember going up the stairs into this church hall. And remember, I've had a period of not drinking. I know what it's going to be like. I'm going to be sitting in these horrible, drafty church halls with a lot of other miserable, angry, bitter alcoholics, you know. And it depends what meeting you go to. No. I thought I was going to be, you know, I've had this experience of not drinking. So I think I know what it's going to be like. So I'm going up the stairs to this AA and Al-Anon meeting. And there's a bit like coming in here, you know, there's a lot of laughter and chatter and everybody's having... And I thought, they must all be from the other lot. They can't be alcoholics. They can't be alcoholics. They're far too happy to be alcoholics. And as that meeting was progressing, it became clear that most people in that meeting were alcoholics. So I made a decision that night that I was going to do whatever you people were doing. You know? Of course, I didn't do it. I just made the decision. And so I sat in these meetings, half listening to what was going on and half reading this stuff on the walls. And I was thinking, you know, there's a God thing. I'm not having anything to do with that God thing. I'm certainly not admitting my thing to anybody else. There was something to do with defects of character. I don't have any of them, so that doesn't apply. And the amends thing, anybody that I've ever harmed has done far worse to me, so I'm not doing any of that either. And I was finding my version of the program wasn't working. And as I say, I was sitting in here in these meetings, half listening, getting madder and madder and angrier because, you know, other people were like happy and I would pretend to be happy. I would pretend, you know, people would say, how are you? And I'd go, yeah, 2 weeks now, great. You know, everything's gone great. But inside, that spring thing is gone and the head vice is gone thing. And I'm getting angrier and angrier and madder, thinking the next happy, clappy git that comes to me and says, keep coming back, get better. We're all happy. If we'd been in the fourth dimension, I endured that period, you know. Having said that, you know, that I would feel better when I was in a meeting, you know. My shoulders would drop a bit and I'd feel, I'd feel better. But there's a really long time between tonight's Serenity Prayer and tomorrow night's preamble, you know, and that was the time when I would be alternating between suicidal thoughts and homicidal thoughts. I couldn't stand that period, you know, I was just trying to get through life without the anaesthetic, you know. So, as I say, I endured that for a period of time, pretending everything was all right because I wanted to be part of the gang, and it became unbearable. So I was faced with a decision. I'm going to drink again, I'm going to kill myself, or I'm going to get one of these sponsors you keep harping on about. And because I didn't think any of that would apply to me, as I said earlier. You know, it might apply, it might work for you people, but you've not had the problems in your life that I've had. You know, I didn't think it was... I hear you saying that you thought you were different, but I really am different. You know? And just a word on the suicide thing. You know, I don't mean to, you know, I know people, new people that have committed suicide. I don't mean to make a joke of this or anything, but if you talk to people in AA about suicide or suicidal thoughts, you know, people are like, no, sometimes people laugh at it in a meeting or that. But if you talk to those people at work, they avoid you. You know, they don't get it, do they? But for me, when I'm spiraled into that place of thinking, you know, suicide seems like a good option. It seems like a step up, you know. That's, you know, people in AA, I know that people in AA have felt like that. I made that decision to go and find a sponsor. And I picked one of those people that were, you know, these happy, clappy ones that are grateful for everything, you know. I picked this one because I thought he was going to be nice to me. And thankfully, though, he cares about saving my life more than cares about hurting my feelings. And so he started to guide me through that book. And it turns out this is like the reason that I didn't really get that is these are the bullet points. the real clear-cut directions are in the book. And when he started to guide me through the book, it started to become clear. And I'll try and be brief. I've got two little stories. One is, I remember I was sharing in a meeting, and I said, I thought, when I came to AA, I thought you were all religious nutters. And this guy shared back, he said, I'm not a religious nutter, but I am a clergyman. The thing about that is, surely he's got an advantage over us. You know, if this is all about God, then he's got enough. And here he's sitting in an AA meeting with the rest of us, you know. And it's not about knowledge. You know, it doesn't say lack of knowledge is our dilemma. Lack of belief or faith or you know, preaching whatever he preaches on a Sunday. It's lack of power. Lack of power is, you know, I could not stay stopped drinking under my own power. I could stop, but I couldn't stay stopped. And once I started again, I had no control over the amount. So I'm completely powerless under my own steam. By myself, I'm completely powerless. So, and it seems to me that the power is there all the time, except it's blocked off by fear and anger and resentment and jealousy and all those negatives, all those things that drove me to drink, literally. And I get guided through this book by somebody who's been guided through the book, etc. And those things get removed. You know, I get fear removed, I get anger removed, I get, you know, not all day, every day, don't get me wrong, but I get that, you know, if I continue to practice that stuff, the things that are blocking me from the power get removed. And I start to feel this, what I now associate with my connection to my higher power. I cannot put it into words, I can't explain to you what it feels like, but I know I feel something when all those other negative things are removed. And that's why I associate now with my connection to my higher power. And I'll just say another brief story about, shut up in a minute. But one of the amends that I went to make It was interesting listening to other people talking about it. I mean, some of my amends were, you know, not good fun. You know, I would go and tell them what I thought I'd make amends to for what I thought I'd done, and then I would have to sit there and listen to what I'd actually done. You know, bit different. And then the other times they were used, you know, people tried to use them as a weapon or not. But anyway, but this one particular one that I'm thinking of now is this guy in Scotland. Originally, I'm from Scotland, from near Edinburgh. But this guy, I made a connection. You know, I found out. I found this guy through Facebook actually, and I made an appointment to go and see him. And we had parted company on some very bad terms. And he didn't want to meet me again. But I said, look, I'd like to try and, you know, put some stuff right that I've done in the past. So I went there. I made this appointment. We arranged to meet. And then, you know, we had a discussion about how I'm going to pay him back for all the things I owe him. And at the end of it, he said, like, what's happened to you? You know, what has brought you back from the dead is what his words were, you know. Well, it was never that bad. But he said that, you know. So I started to explain to him about, I'm in AA now, and, you know, my life has changed as a result of trying to practice this stuff. And without quoting the promises, I was talking to him about this new freedom and new happiness, and I experienced serenity and peace. And in the step 5 promises, it talks about being, I can look the world in the eye, I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. And he went, well, if that's how it makes you feel, why would you need to drink? And a little penny, I thought, that's the whole point of this. You know, if I continue to practice this stuff, I'm not tortured by the things that used to torture me and drive me to drink. I can stay connected, you know. And so I'm going to keep trying to practice it because it seems to be working so far. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.